Third part. Well, how do these considerations affect child rearing, raising children? Now, if I'm right about calling this a guiding conception, it would involve reinventing raising children. It wouldn't change anything we're already doing. We know that we have to do it. It'd be a kind of unifying concept, like the swing thought in golf. Right? That's not technique. That's a unifying idea. Right? And I'm going to mention four things. In Q&A, we can discuss more. You just have to make a limit with these practical things. Right? And actually, I wouldn't be as good at this as my wife would be. Right? She's much more sensitive to these things than I am. And that also speaks to something very important about marriage. Marriage is a two-headed monster. Right? So you have these thoughts.
Yes.
Are you my friend or not? Right, we have all of these ideas, and I hope they're true, and you go away with them. But I also hope that you'll share them with your wives and say, you know, let's work this out together and think about it and see how it applies. Because I think in the application of it, your wife is likely to be better than you are at it, and you'll see you won't be able to see half as much on your own. So, first point: in general, in teaching children, we can extend to older children the application of golden rule type reasoning, which I think comes easily to us for younger children. Okay, so here's an example. The day before I left on a plane for Houston, my 14-year-old son and my 8-year-old son, no, 7-year-old son, were getting tennis lessons. They're studying with one of the players on the team. And the younger son gets this lesson first, and it's a half an hour. And the coach told him to put down the racket and start picking up the balls, which he didn't do. He kept swinging it. And the 14-year-old son walked close to him, and the younger son said, "Watch this," and just swung wildly and hit him in the head with the racket, like, just like this. Right? You know, we made kind of jokes like, you know, if this were hockey, you'd get that every day, so what's the big deal, right? But I impressed upon the younger son, look, how would you like it? Like, he understands it's wrong, right? But use golden rule reasoning. How would you like it if somebody hit you in the face with a racket? Right? You have to do that. That's our Lord teaches. That's the whole source of the moral law. Right? And that's how emotions get engaged with children, because they take the point of view of the other person. Right? But this idea of taking the view of the other person can be generalized even for older children. So this 14-year-old, he's the oldest child of the younger group of seven children. He's a strong leader, but that also makes him a bit of a boss when he's dealing with his younger brothers. Right? He's very, very bossy. He likes to micromanage. He tells them what to do. He's extremely annoying. No. Now, you can say, stop bossing your younger brothers around. Right? And you can say, you're micromanaging. But you can also say, right, who is going to want to associate with you when you're an adult, if that's what you deal with other people? Right? So you get him to look at the point of view of the others, and is he someone anyone would want to befriend? Because, you know, frankly, this is really unpleasant. People are going to be repelled by that in you. Right? Or this same son, he's getting beat up this morning, but that's okay. I won't mention his name. He had a huge problem with truth-telling. You know, just kind of coming up with fibs and things and lies, and kind of we really bore down on him for a while. It's actually proof that virtue can be acquired, because he stopped it. But we really had to stomp on that. I tackled him to the ground once. I mean, just a little kind of side, I think that children are animals. And for proper child-bearing, they have to feel that you're an animal too. Both for good or for bad. Right? The bonding is animal to some extent. It has an animal character. But also the discipline has an animal character. Right? So they have to feel. I'm not in any way, you know, suggesting any kind of damage, but they have to feel. Like the rage. They have to feel that. And I tackled him once after he told a lie. And he felt it. You know, just kind of tackle him, brought him to the floor. You're just not telling lies! Bill said 13, I have 14, because the one who died, so I have 14 kids, so you know, I've got some experience, I think. So, you know, with the lying, it was, of course, the animal communication, but also, and obviously when they get older, you can't tackle them anymore. There's a certain kind of ripe age for animal intimidation, so to speak, but... it's, you know, who's going to trust you if you don't tell the truth? So you're getting somebody to look at himself from a kind of social point of view and see himself from the point of view of somebody who's going to make a choice. He's not like a brother, a captive audience. A choice to associate with him or not. Kids who are not getting at their desk, say they're homeschooled, they're not getting at their desk at 8 in the morning to start their work. You know, employers are really looking for reliable workers. They're not easy to find. Right? You want to be the sort of worker who can show up at a certain time every day. Of course they're going to struggle with that, right? But that's a good thought for them to have when they're struggling with it. I think too much with virtue we take it to be a matter of a law, a duty, a requirement. It becomes solipsistic and it can become a matter of pride, right? And then when you succeed, self-righteousness, right? But I think virtues are inherently social. And it's good in teaching them to bring out that aspect of them. All right, second. Attention to virtues as playing an important role later in friendship. Okay, that's my point. Now I understand what I'm saying. All right, there are certain virtues which are important for friendship. And pay attention to them in particular with a view to the role that they'll play in friendship. Right, this is an application of the idea of Jim Stenson, that in raising a child, you have to have before you the idea of the adult. Right? Don't make the mistake as fathers of basking in the innocence and ease of raising young children and kind of wishing that they would always stay young. Right? This is a particular temptation. I've gone through it twice, when all the children are kind of gathered below a certain age, maybe 12, 13, maybe as late as 14. Right, you may have 5, 6, 7 kids in that age group, even if you've gone to more children. And it's very, very pleasant and soothing in a certain way to be a father to that kind of pack of kids. Because if you say, let's go to the grocery store, yeah, let's all go to the grocery store. Or, you know, I think I'll say a rosary. Anybody want to join me? Yeah, come on, and we'll just sit next to you and this kind of thing, right? And, you know, when a kid starts to be 13, 14 years old, then, right, as has been pointed out before, your time to be influencing the kid as their major social influence is coming to an end, right? It's going to be their peers, their equals, as they've grown more and more equal to you. Right, and then you have to change how you're dealing with them. There's a certain reciprocity, there's going to be a kind of bargaining going on, there's going to be an awareness of their kind of being an entirely distinct person. They're not necessarily going to go along with what you want. Right.
What if that's happening now?
Happening now.
At the young age.
It's happening at the young age. But that's a different matter. Okay. That's a different cause.
Talk.
A different cause, yes, exactly. My 2-year-old has that same problem. I don't know how the 2-year-old can do this. Kind of make she actually makes a face at me. Scowls. And then she kind of shouts. I think she's imitating me. Says she's not going to do it. All right, so we're talking about maybe 4 to 14. All right. So, you know, for example, commitment to a team. All these things, you know, it's hard to give practical things that hold for universally. They're all for the most part. And you know, they vary from household to household. Households have different characters, they have different cultures, they have different approaches, different styles. But for example, our style as regards an athletic team is if you make a commitment to the team, then you go to the practices, you go to the games, and you give up everything else except, you know, something like a holy day of obligation. But you have to make that a top priority because you made a commitment. Right? And I could see, I could perfectly understand families not placing that kind of importance on it. But I think it's, if you do, right, the reason that you do is you want to get them used to the idea that you make commitments around which you bend everything else that you're doing, right, which is necessary for friendship. Or listening to directions. Right? If I give a series of directions to a child about some job to be done, right, they're listening to those directions, or they're even opening up a page of instructions when some kind of thing comes into the household, some kind of gadget or something, and reading, that's related to listening to somebody, which is so important for friendship. Kind of putting away your own thoughts, your own stuff, and just being quiet and listening very carefully to what someone else is saying. Or self-knowledge, right? So all the time we're teaching, we're dealing with something like lying, we're dealing with something like bossing around. One of the things you have to do is to get the child to understand, to see that that's what they're doing, to understand, start to glimpse some of the motives, or to understand the extent of it. Self-knowledge is absolutely crucial, right, for friendship. Right, so that's the second first point. The first point was using golden rule type reasoning to lead children to think of themselves, view themselves from the viewpoint of others. The second was pay attention to virtues that are going to be significant in friendships as having that sort of significance in the Jim Stenson way of looking at things. Third is being alert to the various constellations of friendships that are in your family. And friendship, family is actually a composition of three friendships. There's the friendship between the husband and the wife, which is like a foundation. There's the friendships among the siblings, which is kind of like a layer built on top of that foundation, and then there are friendships between the parents and the children. So three different types of friendships. And if you have a lot of children, right, you can do the math, you have a lot of combinations of pairs of people whose friendships you have to be concerned about, actually. Right? So in the care of the husband and wife type friendship, that's really important for an example and also for kind of a feeling, like a sense of what's in the household that the children have, right? A sense of solidity, a sense of the significance of friendship, and so to speak, the good of friendship, that it flows down to them. And in this regard, there are a lot of things that can be at odds with husband-wife friendship. One is you're very busy and you're going two different directions, two tracks, right? One is a kind of puritanical idea that you shouldn't pay attention to your own relationship once you have children. You have to serve the children, right? It's selfish to pay attention to your relationship, right? But the husband and wife relationship, which is primarily a marriage, but there's a friendship that grows along with the marriage, has to be maintained as primary because it's the foundation of the household. So in this regard, for example, I would recommend a schedule similar to your interior life. If you go away on a retreat once a year, go away on a retreat, so to speak, with your wife once a year. You have a monthly day of recollection, a monthly evening of conferencing, talking with your wife about matters of the household and communication. Daily, some time together with your wife talking, the way you have daily mental prayer. It has to have the similar structure because we're talking about the same thing. Again, friendship with a human. Right. So, it's good to do things before your children that they see are flowing just from the friendship. And that's typically for a marriage going to be something romantic, like a hug, or getting flowers, or a thoughtful compliment, or something like that. Because that, then they see the energy. They see the energy of the relationship. And that's attractive. Second, care of friendships among the siblings. So a lot of parents later in life have the feeling that if their children would get along, that would be the most gratifying thing for them. And the children are not getting along. Right. So why are their children not getting along? Well, one reason is that maybe the children's getting along was never anything they paid a lot of attention to. Right? Did they ever tell the children when they were young, you know, something that really, really means a lot to me is that you get along well with your brothers and sisters. Right? Something as simple as that, just explaining it to them. That's something you really do want them to do. Right? But I think very important in the household is attention to charity and speech. bickering, attacks, ways in which things are said, tones of voice, emphasis, right, without correcting absolutely everything, because really absolutely everything does need to be corrected. Strategically picking out, sometimes using people as examples, sometimes around the dinner table, gently as much as possible, right? Pointing out ways in which charity and speech needs to be practiced. So I think that's the main issue. By the way, politeness and manners go a huge distance here, right? Part of the reason for politeness was to keep ourselves from not offending one another, not doing things that are unpleasant to others. So kind of our basic mode of relating to others is at least neutral and maybe slightly pleasant. Fostering future friendships of each parent with each child. So taking care to go on dates, to spend time together, can be very demanding, you know, if you have a lot of children, actually. Right? But then again, St. Joseph Maria says there's nothing more important you can do with your time. Late night conversations in the kitchen when you want to go to bed, well, you're going to sleep a little bit less that night, right? That's when they want to talk, the teenagers. Right? Long walks, being out in nature, fishing together, hunting together, playing golf together, right? Drives, road trips. Look for these things. Encourage them. Plan them. Be scheming about it. Don't let anyone know, but you are scheming about them, right? Not insisting on the families being together as a pack. I think this is another mistake that fathers make. They like their family so much that they want everybody to be present all the time together. Right? But you have to allow large families to kind of break up naturally and spontaneously into various subgroups. And people go off into different pairs, trios, and spend time together. You should like that. Right? That's a good thing. That's the way in which those friendships can form among the siblings. And that's part of the joy of family life, to tell you the truth, all those different combinations. Okay, my last point is this. Fostering the right sorts of friendships of your children with friends. So the standard child and adolescent and teenager friendships in the United States are pretty impoverished, I think. All right. So your goal is to go against the tide. First thing I would recommend is throughout all the video games. This may be a kind of very controversial thing, but you know, I've had a lot of friends come in our house and they go, okay, where are the video games? Right? Well, there are no video games in this house, right? So, video games in very, very small quantities, but generally they're very poor. They're poor for personal relationships. And the effect that they have on the nervous system, I'm convinced, we'll ask the doctors about this, to make the people who spend time playing video games very sensitive and irritable at the end of the time, and fights break out among children who spend time, lots of time watching video games. And generally, keep away from the electric stuff. Have books and encourage time outdoors and board games. All of that stuff is better from the point of view of fostering friendships. Social media too, right? Meet in person. Talk on the phone, which is kind of old-fashioned, right? But Facebook, for example, can have a good role in helping friends keep in touch after they formed a friendship, but more typically it plays a role of keeping a genuine friendship from forming because it's too superficial in the first place. And then finally, put a high priority on forming friendships yourself with parents who have a similar view about how to raise children. Because you need to make your children feel as though they're not outcasts or strange people or lunatics or something like that. And in reality, they just need one friend to persevere. And so something I've encountered much in dealing with the pro-life movement is how many women who've had abortions said that if just one friend would have supported me, that would have been enough to have the strength to resist the abortion, right? And that's true. Right? So you take something that's very desperate, very extreme, very difficult, but just one friend is all you need, right? And our Lord sent out the disciples two by two, knowing this. And in a certain sense, you just need one good friend. Right? don't need a lot. Aristotle discusses this. You don't need a lot of friends. But we do want our children to form those handful of good friendships while they're growing up with children, with friends who are being raised in the same way. And that will give them the strength to persevere and to flourish in this good path. All right, so thank you very much, and we have Q&A right now.